everybody, to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for sticking around on what's left of this Monday morning. Text line if you want to try to get in, 251-340-106. And maybe by the end of the program, we'll be able to get to those text messages. Joining us now on the line, always a pleasure. Our friend from Citronelle, Shane Stringer, State Representative Shane Stringer, with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Hey, doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me again.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Well, you're right here at Ground Zero, and I know you're watching this close, and you and I have texted a little bit off air about this, but redistricting, the line going to come smack dab through the middle of your district, it looks like.
Yeah, it looks like if things go the way it's expected, then my district will be in District 2, so going to be some changes for us.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to be a weird district. You're on the far, far end of one that's going to stretch all the way to Phoenix City there. You look at this, Representative, how much does a guy at your position deal with your federal representation on a regular basis?
It's probably a little more than most people would think. You know, I get a lot of requests from constituents for assistance on stuff that's more on the federal level. And so I reach out and I speak to, our representatives from the federal side, Jericho specifically. And, you know, they give us help and they will jump right on it and try to help the constituents out with those kind of stuff. So, you know, it just kind of varies. It kind of comes and goes. You'll have a run where you get a lot of calls, and then you'll have a few months where you don't get much.
Yeah, and people often, they're not really sure who they call about a problem. Is this a federal issue, a state issue, a city, county, whatever issue? And a lot of times, you're not even the one who would directly deal with it. You're just kind of directing traffic.
Yeah, you know, our job is to try to get the constituents the help they need, regardless of whose area of responsibility it is to deal with it. So, you know, even if it's a county level or a city level or something, I still, you know, my job is to have the contacts and resources to be able to reach out and help these constituents and put them in touch with the right people. And that's what we do on a federal level with our district. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out and, you know, the relationships we'll have depending on, you know, where the candidate that gets elected is from.
Yeah. So I guess now, kind of being at the bookend here and not getting lost in the shuffle, because this looks to me like this will be a consequence of these new lines, that maybe you get somebody in there from Montgomery or you get somebody in there from the Wiregrass who thinks, well, you know, they got a guy in Mobile right there, like down the street, representing the other congressional district to the south here. They can take on this, and I'll get this into the district caught up on what it needs to be caught up on.
Yeah, and if they go with that mindset, they're going to be mistaken, because, you know, we're going to, you know, in the past, we don't necessarily have to hold anybody's feet to the fire. The candidates that we've had, Representative Bradley Byrne and with Jerry Call, they have been great, and they step up and go above and beyond. But, you know, if not, I'm not going to put more work on, you know, District 1's rep if it's a District 2 issue. We're going to, you know, hold their feet to the fire and make sure that they're representing their district.
Well, this wasn't totally unexpected, though. I mean, and I am, you know, kind of curious. Oh, we heard from Representative Pringle. He's on Capital Journal. He's on Sean's show Friday. Kind of walk through this. And you had two maps, and you guys in the House had one, and the senators had another, and ultimately the senators' map prevailed. You know, looking at that process, and I know it's hindsight, but was it better to kind of try to throw the Hail Mary and hope to get some relief from the court? Or would you want to, was playing it more conservative maybe the better approach here, and not have to not have this situation? Because the way I look at it, like, a lot of this we kind of figured was going to happen this way, didn't we?
Yeah, you know, and it was a very tough situation for Protean Pringle and everyone that was involved. I mean, it was almost like a no-win situation or scenario from the get-go. You know, we wanted to do something productive and do something, but everybody also felt like that, you know, in order to do it the proper way and not involve gerrymandering, then it was going to have to, you know, we were going to have to just look at the numbers and the districts. And that's what we tried to do, and I thought that's what we had done, but evidently the courts didn't see it as such.
Well, now I guess you just wait and see. We'll find out on October 11th how this is going to play out. But, I you know, do you think are you still looking, thinking that maybe the Supreme Court will address this and will you'll get some relief, or maybe this is how it's going to be for a few election cycles until the next census?
It is very hard to tell at this point. You know, it's a lot of discussion, a lot of talk about it, but at the end of the day, I think everyone's still uncertain on which way things will go. You know, it's going to be what it's going to be, and we're just going to have to deal with it the best we can in whichever way it goes. And, you know, I think the Republican Party will step up and we'll support the candidates that run in these districts regardless. And, you know, hopefully we get the turnout that's needed to prevail.
Joined by State Representative Shane Stringer here on the program. Representative, let's move on to some other things. We had David Sessions on. We're kind of previewing 2024 potentially. But there's some things that I'm keeping an eye on. I think talking to one of your leaders, this is going to be the year for ethics and gaming, that you already have Representative Simpson over in Baldwin County working on the ethics side of it. And then Andy Witt up in North Alabama, traveling the state, it appears, to check out gaming and figure out a solution there. Are you optimistic on either one of those? I mean, these have always been kind of a third rail, if you will, for you guys in the legislature. And maybe one chamber passes something, the other chamber doesn't adopt it, or vice versa. And we talk about it a lot at this stage in the game. And then when it's all said and done, when you guys gavel out for the year, just ran out of time or whatever. But could this be the year that you get comprehensive gaming or some kind of ethics bill through the Alabama legislature?
As far as the gaming, I think it's probably going to have the best shot it's ever had, or one of the best shots. You know, lots of talk, a lot of effort and work has been put into it with Chairman Witt, you know, traveling the state, you know, just trying to look at what we got and what's going on across the state as it is. You know, we've tackled it in some shape, form, or fashion every year that I've been there. Nothing, you know, substantial yet. So, but I think or suspect that this is going to be one of the better shots that we'll have to pass some form of gaming. You know, we'll see. We'll cross it, I guess, when it comes up. As far as the ethics stuff, you know, Chairman Simpson is working hard on that. I'm in constant contact with him, and you know what they have going on, and they could not have picked a better person to tackle that and try to look at it. I mean, we have got to make our ethics laws more comprehensive and transparent, you know, make it where people understand the lines and where they're at, so we can make sure that everything is done proper and legal and ethical. So I have no doubt that he's working hard on that, and, you know, is going to get something accomplished with that. So from talking with leadership, I think that both of those issues are on the top of their list, and they have a lot of hopes that something's going to happen with it.
Well, and that's the thing, and that is just your experience, but the current ethics law or ethics regime, it's too broad. It's not defined. There's a lot of confusion there, you know, and you talk to one lawyer, and then You talk to another lawyer, they can tell you two different things. And that to me looks like that leaves open problems for not just you guys in the legislature, but other, I mean, how it applies to teachers, how it applies to other government employees, that this was just, this was done in such a rush. It shouldn't have been that way, but now you've gotten it done in 2011 or 2010 or somewhere in there. And now you're having to kind of live and die by the rush here. And then now maybe it's the time to revisit this.
Yes. And I think that one of the things you see with issues like this is, you know, from the issues that they had back in that time, 2009, 2010, you know, they had a knee-jerk reaction. They knew that something needed to be done, and they came in there and tried to, you know, make it better. And I think they took it too far. And like you said, it affects the teachers, state employees, and a lot of people, not just legislators. So, you know, a lot of that has changed since then, and we've had a chance to see that maybe, you know, maybe it's too, you know, too strict or not transparent enough when you have, like you said, attorneys that are having different opinions or views on some of this. And not just them, but you have different opinions from the Attorney General's office and the Ethics Commission on some of these issues. So that don't need to be happening. It needs to be very clear where everything is, so that those two are for surely on board and in agreements. And then that way everybody understands where the lines are.
Well, and you know, that in state government, there's so much dysfunction in state government, but it is just underscored by this constant back and forth between the AG's office and the Ethics Commission. And is there, I mean, when you look at ethics, is that something that needs to be addressed here? Because I you know, we've been hearing about this for years. And we just need some clarity here, what the role of each of these agencies are when it comes to the ethics issue.
Yes, and I think that some of this that Chairman Simpson is looking at is going to hopefully address some of that and make it clear whose responsibility and roles and, you know, how the process will work, you know, when it comes to dealing with both agencies. And, you know, I think that with a little cooperation and a little collaboration, they can, you know, get on the same page and we can have it where it needs to be. We have professional people, you know, running both agencies, so no reason why we can't get it to where it needs to be.
Representative, another hot button topic, and I don't know how much of a problem it is in your district necessarily, but this controversy with the libraries. Now, my buddy Dale Jackson up in North Alabama thinks that you guys are just chomping at the bit to get and start meddling in the local libraries. And I mean, some of these books are very graphic and whatever, but using the legislature to address this problem, it seems to be like using a meat cleaver when all you need is a scalpel, right? Do you is that even on the radar for you and your colleagues?
Now, I do not hear, I have not heard, or do I hear any of those issues in my district. I get where he's coming from and understand that, but, you know, also understand that there has to be some checks and balances in place. And whenever you have, you know, local government that's not addressing issues that is a concern to the public, then yeah, there may be a need for legislation to be done. But, you know, it's no different than the movie industry now. You know, I can take my six-year-old to a movie and it'll have ratings. If there's going to be smoking or sexual behavior or nudity in the movie or curse words, but, you know, there can be homosexuality in there and there's nothing on there. You know, then halfway through the movie, I'm explaining to a six-year-old what's going on there and why this character has two mommies or two daddies instead of the traditional family.
Yeah, and you know, like, how do you police that? How do you handle that? And I've always thought this, well, not always, but just here lately, why don't we do books like we do movies? Like, people seem to be okay with the G, PG, PG-13, NC-17, R, et cetera. why not do something similar with some of these books that are in question? And you know, that seems to be like a good way to do it, but it's just, there's such pushback whenever this issue comes up from a lot of different parts of the political spectrum.
I agree, and that's not a bad way to look at it or a bad option. You know, I think at the end of the day, it's all about finding a balance in how we handle these situations and do with it. You know, I think that there should be a rating system or something in place to where children are not getting their hands on stuff. You know, I've heard from other representatives where, you know, children are at a young age are reading a book that has a sex scene in it involving, you know, homosexuality. And, you know, there needs to be something in place to address that. Now, you know, if a parent decides they want to let their children read that or whatever, that's on them. But I think there needs to be something in there to let parents know what's going on and help them. You know, I think this wokeism is attempting to change society, and I think it's trying to do that through our movie industry, through our books and a lot of that. So, you know, we've got to stay on top of it. I want to make sure, you know, my children are raised in a Christian home and brought up with Christian values, and make sure I'm doing my part on in my home.
Yeah, they really are trying to advance an agenda through the culture. Last question. We'll get you out of here on this. And we're still kind of waiting to see what's going to happen with the West Alabama corridor and the, you know, that whole discussion there. Do you, we got Brett Easterbrook coming on tomorrow to talk about it, but like at this point, Representative, do you think it's a done deal that this is the governor's the governor? She won the election. And a lot of what we're talking about here, you may be able to slow it down some, but it's just this is the way transportation policy is going to be until the next governor is elected.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that it's a done deal. You know, I think that with all the land acquisition and all the engineering and everything that has been done this far, I just don't see how there's going to be too much backing out of it. Plus, you know, the governor standing firm that she's with it, behind it, and on board with it. So at this point, I just don't see any other route other than they're going forward with it. So, you know, I guess we'll see how it goes and, you know, see how, you know, because these projects don't happen overnight. They take many, many, many years. And so we'll see what happens. You know, if it goes past the next election and whether the governor runs or not. So, you know, it's things change when we have different administrations, and we'll see what direction we go from there.
Representative, we always appreciate it. Thanks for your time this morning, and we'll do this again soon.
Yes, sir. Thank y'all for having me.
Shane Stringer, ladies and gentlemen, represents North Mobile County. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.